never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Of time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste, all the lives that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a 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 face.
Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show with your host, David James. Welcome, dear kinswomen and kinsmen. I'd like to thank all of you for what you do for the kingdom. Whatever you're doing, you're trying to reach our brethren, praying, all the different things that you do for the kingdom. Thank you. And may you grow exponentially and do more as you can. Thank you for what you do. I have an announcement, a pleasurable announcement, that Nikki had a healthy baby boy, and he was a big feller too. And everything went well. I want to thank you for your prayers. And her dad, John, thanks you for the prayers. And also, I ask you to keep praying for Michael. He's trying to get over the radiation stuff that he had to go through. And his mom, Linda, wanted me to thank you all for praying for Michael. And she asked you to continue to pray for him, and I hope you will. I have been all along and will continue. May the Father restore him completely without any ramifications or any effects from those horrible types of treatment. Okay, I want you to know that the Comparay thing is progressing, and I'm almost to the point where all the files, I got one more file to do, and all of them will be processed and cleaned. All I have to do is now clean the coughs and bumps and noises. But I've cleaned all the, you know, hiss and all that kind of stuff, and tried to shape it the best I can. You know, to be honest with you, I did so many hours on between this and Dr. Wesley Swift just to get it to the computer is over 100 hours worth of work. And the Comparay tapes just aren't, you know, they're just not quality. And I can only deliver you the best I can. I improve it. But if there's not a lot of highs in it, I can't put highs in it. You know what I'm saying? If they're not there, you can't do anything about it. So all I do, but generally speaking, most of them sound pretty good and very audible. And so I think that this will be going to Kingdom Identity Ministries, and he'll be selling this Revelation package on CDs and so on and so forth. So you may support him by doing that. So what happens is I finish cleaning these all off, and this will take some time because Mr. Comparay makes lots and lots of noises. He has this cough, and he's bumping on the tables, and there's jets going by. I can't get rid of all that stuff, but I get rid of as much as I possibly can to make it as clean and audible as possible. And so hopefully, you know, that project is coming to an end. And then I'll just be putting out the Dr. Wesley Swift and W.G. Finley. Yes, and I'm enjoying Mr. Finley's stuff. I think he's remarkable. I don't know why people from Christian Identity say, oh, those pastors from South Africa, you know, yeah. Yeah, because they don't, because he didn't like the Apostle Paul. That's why. Well, we're not all going to agree on everything, ladies and gentlemen. If you get to know me personally, you would find that we don't agree on everything. But we don't have to agree on everything. And I would not force you to believe anything that I want you to believe. You have to come to these things yourself. I hope that you will understand that we need to be forgiving to one another and that we must understand that we will not agree on everything. It's just the way it is. There's no reason for us to keep splitting unless it was something like, you know, oh yeah, the father agrees with homosexuality. I mean, come on. Now, you know, you're not going to put up with something like that, right? But I'm just saying, you know, we need to let people come to, some people aren't at the same place as other people. That's generally the way it is. You've got somebody that just comes into finding out about the father. He's not going to understand all the things. And that's what's going to happen in today's, we're starting something. I realized that the Red Network, we learned a lot of things there, and I think that that's what we needed to learn. There's another part of it where there's a lot of illustrations and stuff. You might want to take a look at that book yourself. I'm very into this next book, and I like Eustace Mullins, and I told you we were going to get into this, and it's called The Curse of Canaan. Now, I don't believe that Eustace knew necessarily that we were the Israelites of the Bible. This first chapter, the way he puts it is we are Shem. Okay? And he tries to explain how black people came about and this and that. And I don't agree with that. But you see, the world still wants to believe that, no, you know, what he was saying, what you'll see here is he will talk about, you know, Canaan, and he'll talk about Ham and Ham's son and this and that. And you'll understand what I'm talking about. All of this is taking an objective look at what somebody else has to say. This fellow is an excellent, you know, he searches for things. He's able to, he's an excellent researcher. And so I just take it as it is. I know what I believe about where the blacks came from. And I know, I don't think Eustace understands that, I'm not sure, but we'll see as we read this. I don't think he understands that those other races were here before us. You know, I hope it makes a lot of sense to you what I said about what the devil's trying to do. See, the devil is actually a conservative, believe it or not. For his own things, that is. He's a liberal otherwise, but the devil is a conservative. Why do I say that? Conservatives try to go back or try to keep a time that is usually past. The devil ruled the brown man before Whitey came here. Before we came and were sent here to take dominion from the devil ruled this planet of these brown people, perhaps the black people, and the dragon seed. So he wants to go back to a time. He's a conservative. You understand what I mean by that? In other words, he wants to push it back to a time when there's only those people here, and he can rule over them. And boy, that was quite a revelation to me. But let's not waste a lot of time on this, but understand what I'm saying about the devil being a conservative in this stance is that he wants to return to a time that has passed. Whitey's here. And Whitey's here to stay. This is The Curse of Canaan. And my goodness, are you going to hear some wonderful things in this book, some really remarkable things. I was going to skip this part, but I said, well, let's present it to the people, you know, and I want to read it again. You know, I listened to this, and of course, I didn't agree with all of it, but it's interesting nonetheless, because I believe he goes to the Jewish sources to find out some of this stuff, okay? People have these questions, well, did Adam have sex with Lilith, or did the devil disguise himself, you know, that the tree of knowledge of good and evil, did he disguise himself as a woman and have sex with Adam? I don't know. But let's see what Eustace says. The title of the chapter is The War Against Shem. They sacrificed unto demons, which were no gods, Deuteronomy 32:17. In the churches of America, Christians worship a somewhat paternal god. The bearded patriarch whom Michelangelo depicted on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, an authoritarian figure who is also the father of our teacher and our savior, Jesus Christ. God is revered as the original creator of our universe and as the ultimate moral guide. In this scenario, now listen to the word he uses because he doesn't know. You see, this is relatively a new revelation. This thing about He-Man. And there's a lot of people that are picking up on it right away. The people are getting it. Because I really do. I think it just makes perfect sense. But he uses the word nevertheless. In this scenario, humanity, which should be mankind, is somewhat of an innocuous group placed in a pastoral setting, generally obedient to the laws of God, and subject to the punishment when disobedience occurs. Religious observance based on this concept is adequate until this Arcadian scene is disturbed by misadventures of calamities. It also begs the question of innate or inescapable evil. Satan, the fallen angel and rebel against God, Satan, a Hebrew word meaning adversary, appears in the Bible. There are frequent references to God's admonishment and often chastisement of wrongdoers, both individually and in large groups. Here again, the persistent appearance of evil throughout the history of mankind is dealt with. Now he used the word, you see the confusion, ladies and gentlemen? See, he just used the word mankind. It's funny how people can be totally awake like Eustace was, and yet he doesn't know that we are the true, you know, Israelites of the Bible. It's very, very interesting that a man this smart wouldn't have figured out about the humanity thing. Because he used humanity before here, and now he uses mankind. And then he uses humanity again right here, I just noticed. Listen, this is weird. But I mean, it's just the way it is. It's indicative of everybody today. They don't understand there's a difference between mankind and humanity. Here again, the persistent appearance of evil throughout history of mankind is dealt with as it occurs, but it is difficult to fix either its sources or its causes. Therefore, humanity has existed under a considerable disadvantage, unable to recognize or understand evil before being injured by it. Indeed, the great movement of modern history has been to disguise the presence of evil on the earth. Now let me stop, to make light of it, to convince humanity that evil is to be tolerated, treated with greater understanding, or negotiated with, but under no circumstances should it ever be forcibly opposed. Now, haven't I been talking about that? Isn't that interesting? Wow. Right? You see, what it's saying, what I was saying to you on some previous shows here, just recent, is that the world is no longer making a pretense that it is not evil. It's not trying to pretend it's good anymore. It's outright, blatantly, in your face, evil. So he says here, the great movement of modern history has been to disguise the presence of evil on the earth, which we now see they're not even trying to anymore. To make light of it, you know, joke about it. Ah, the devil's not real. Evil. Yeah. And to convince everybody that, he says humanity, that evil is to be tolerated. See, good is not to be tolerated. And white people are not to be tolerated. And the father is not to be tolerated. Only evil's to be tolerated. And of course, what I have said was, you cannot negotiate with evil. You have to take, you have to forcibly, you know, use violence to stop it. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is. And it's just so ironic that everything they do against good, they use violence to stop it. But they want us to say, oh no, you must tolerate this evil. But we don't tolerate your good. See, this is interesting. So he says here that they're trying to convince, I'm going to say mankind, that evil is to be tolerated, treated with greater understanding. You know, like criminals, we need to look into their psychology and try to understand what happened to them as children that would cause this bad behavior. And we also should negotiate with it. But under no circumstances should it ever be forcibly opposed. This is the principal point of what has come to be known today as today's liberalism, more properly known, popularly known as secular humanism. Hello? Are we connecting the dots right this second now, or what? Now, I read this book a long time ago, but I've been recently listening to this book, but I don't remember hearing this part of it. The popular and apparently sensible appeal of humanism is that humanity should always place human interests first. The problem is that this very humanism can be traced in an unbroken line all the way back to the biblical curse of Canaan. Humanism is the logical result of the demonology of history. Very interesting. Now, there it is again. So what I've been saying about humanism, right? Colored man. The popularity and apparently sensible appeal of humanism is that humanity should always place human interests first. Now, in that sentence, humanity, they want you to think it includes white people so that you will help put the colored man's interest first. Oh, yes. So, modern day events can be understood only if we can trace their implications in a direct line from the earliest records of antiquity. These records concern pre-Adamic man. Oh, so he knew about pre-Adamic man. Oh, okay, let's see what happens. A hybrid creature whose origins are described in ancient books. The Book of Enoch, which itself is part of an earlier Book of Noah, written about 161 BC, says that Samjaza, Satan, the leader of the band of 200 angels, descended on Mount Carmel. They had lusted after the daughters of men from afar, and now they took them for wives. These fallen angels, known as the Order of the Watchers, taught their wives magic. The issue of these unions was a race of giants known as Nephilim. The Bible does not mention Nephilim specifically by name. Strong's Concordance does not list them. However, Nelson's Concordance has several listings under Nephilim. The verses of the verses of the Bible to which it refers are Genesis 6:4. There were giants in the earth in those days. The Revised Standard Version does give the name of the Nephilim, the same verse reading, the Nephilim were on the earth in those days. These giants later became known as the sons of Anak, and that's A-N-A-K. In Numbers 13:33, we read, and there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. These giants constituted a powerful menace to other peoples. In Deuteronomy 9:2 is the complaint. Who can stand before the children of Anak? Nevertheless, they were finally killed or driven out. There were none of the Anakims left in the land of the children of Israel. See, now that doesn't mean there weren't Anakim left in other lands, though. See? That's Joshua 11:22. These early giants would be considered as mutations by modern scientists. Because of their peculiar parentage, they had habits and lusts which horrified their neighbors. Their leader, Satan, the adversary of God, also known as Satona, was the serpent who entered into and seduced Eve. Listen to this again. He was the serpent who entered into and seduced Eve, producing the first murderer, Cain. Not only were the Nephilim a menace to others, their uncontrollable hatred and violence sometimes led them to attack and kill each other. They then ate their victims, introducing cannibalism into the world. According to some accounts, God slaughtered them, while Archangel Michael, imprisoned the fallen angels, the order of the Watchers, in deep chasms in the earth. Unfortunately for humanity, you mean mankind, this was not the end of the matter. There are typos in this. This says this was not the end of the matter. Anyway, Satan, through his children, the Nephilim, also through Cain, and now established a demonic presence on the earth. His rebellion against God. You see, here's why that is. I'll explain that real quick. When these angels procreated with the daughters, this is what I talk about in all the signs of the earth. The sons of God and the daughters of men. It's an unholy union producing a God child, the giant, the Nephilim. And when these creatures die, they can't return to the Father. You understand? Because they were not created by the Father. So they're stuck here on earth in spirit form. All right, so let me continue. See how he keeps going back and forth with mankind, humanity. See, I know the difference between mankind and humanity, and I think you do too now. We are mankind. We are not humanity. Humanity is those who were here before us. And of course, humanity includes all these hybrids as well. But mankind doesn't include hybrids. So that's the definition. That's the proper way to define it. We are mankind. They are humankind. Okay, so it says his rebellion against God would result in continuous suffering and travail on earth for centuries to come. The history of mankind since his rebellion is the history of the struggle between the people of God and the cult of Satan. With this understanding, it is now possible to trace the historical events which reveal the actual archives of the two adversaries. Now, isn't it funny how close he is to two seed line theology? The cult of Satan, meaning the serpent seed line, and the people of God, meaning the Adamic race. The cult of Satan also meaning the dragon seed, the half-breeds, etc., etc. The Jews, you know, Jews are half-breeds. So, you see the two adversaries. So he's very close to two seed line theology here. The book of Zohar stresses the Talmudic legend that demons originated in sexual congress between humans and demonic powers. This offers a reasonable explanation as to why all occult ceremonies stress three things. Listen to what they stress. Drugs, incantations which express the hatred of God, and bizarre practices. Sex and drugs and bizarre sexual practices. Sex and drugs and rock and roll, right? You know, it could just be an incantation, a prayer, or, you know, these types of things. Or it doesn't have to be music, but anything that expresses the hatred of the Father, like the Talmud does. Interesting that the book of Zohar stresses this, huh? All occult ceremonies stress three things. Again, I'm saying this. Drugs, incantations, which express the hatred of God, and bizarre sexual practices. The study of demonology in history discloses answers to otherwise inexplicable aspects of man's history. Man's, that now he says. The torture and murder of children, obscene rites and mass killings of innocents in worldwide wars, as well as other catastrophes, are phenomena which bear little or no relation to mankind's day-by-day routine of tilling the soil, raising families, and maintaining the standards of civilization. On the contrary, these types of calamities are direct assaults on the normal existence of, now he uses humanity. What is this with people, folks? Why would he keep switching that around? Now, me, if I wrote this, you know how I would use the two words. But see, he just keeps going back and forth as if these two terms are interchangeable, which they are not. I'm just letting you know this as I'm reading it, because if there's anything you should know about what I'm trying to teach you, is that we're in a war of words here. And it's important that we understand words and use them correctly. Whatever they've used against us, you notice me trying to change it back to what it's supposed to be, right? I don't just keep using it and letting them get away with it and letting them destroy us with terms. We're in a war of words, ladies and gentlemen. Furthermore, they are expressions of the rebellion against God as attacks on his people. Okay, let me state this now, that this communist revolution is nothing but a rebellion against God, because communism is not compatible to God, and communism is not compatible to religion. Communism is not compatible, like the Jew is not compatible, with the Anglo-Saxon people and our nations, which are the heavenly establishment on earth. Yes, the Israelite nations, the white Adamic nations, are the heavenly nations on earth. Make that very clear in your mind. And these people that are on our soil doing what they're doing right now, Jews and Negroes and all the rest of them, they're rebellion. This is a rebellion. A revolution is a rebellion. Footnote, according to mythology, okay, so this is mythology he's talking about here, but let's see what it says. Because of their extraordinary powers, demons have always attracted a certain number of followers on earth, secret organizations which insist on concealing their rites and their programs from all outsiders. They must do so in order to prevent exposure and the inevitable punishment. While they were wandering in the desert, now see, this is how it shows you that he doesn't know who we are. While they were wandering in the desert, the Jewish tribes, boom, no. The Israelites, yes. And it's bad what it's saying. So, you know, it's not like I'm trying to change something. This is to our detriment. So I'm going to change that word Jewish to Israelite. While they were wandering in the desert, the Israelite tribes worshiped demons and monsters. They revered their mythical monsters Leviathan, Behemoth, and Rahab, who may have been survivors of the tribes of giants, the Nephilim. They also made sacrifices to the demons of the desert, Azazel. Well, maybe what he is talking about is, see, he doesn't understand that, I suppose you could change that to the tribes of Edomites. We did worship the golden calf and so on and so forth, and that was encouraged by the mixed multitude that followed along with us. So maybe that'll just give you a little hint. Their mythology developed a certain hierarchy of demons, a demonarch who presumably was Satan, ruled over all the demons on earth. He was also known as the Prince of Evil, Belial. The Hebrew Beliah, listen to this, meaning Yahweh is Baal. And when I looked that up to try to find out, it says Yahweh is Lord. All right. Now, we know Lord means Baal, but we know Lord means owner. So I don't think Eustace knows that the Father's name is Yahweh, that that's not the devil at all. But I read it to you just so you'd hear it. And that was in, see, I looked up the Hebrew word Bealiah. It's B-E apostrophe L-A, I mean A-L-I-A-H. B-E apostrophe A-L-I-A-H. Next in the hierarchy of demons was Asmodeus, king of the demons, and his wife Lilith, chief demoness of the Jews. Lilith is well known. Yeah, that's true. It's not of the Israelites, that's for sure. This is out of the Kabbalah and things like that. And of course, I'm sure it's in the Talmud as well. Lilith is well known today as the patron goddess of the lesbians. Are you listening? Who promotes lesbianism? The Jews, right? So of course, that goes right along with this, correct? Really remarkable. Lilith is well known today as the patron goddess of the lesbians. Her name survives in many current organizations, such as the Daughters of Lilith. This choice of a patroness suggests that there may always have been in a certain amount of demonic impulses in homosexual practices. This motivation would fit in with the basic rites of occultism, such as defiance of God, and the development of unusual lifestyles, quote unquote. The inevitable retribution for these practices has now appeared among us in the form of a widespread plague of AIDS. Lilith is typical of the demons who were created by sexual intercourse between the daughters of men and the watchers. You see, this is why I say that it is an unholy union. This is race mixing. The angels, the sons of God, and the daughters of men mixed with the daughters of men, that is an abomination. You can only create an abomination or demons or whatever it is. Like I said, if that's the way it really is, those spirits are trapped here now because they can't return to Yahweh because he did not create them. He did not plant them in the earth. You understand? Every plant not planted by my heavenly Father shall be plucked up, you know, and cast into the lake of fire. So you see how that works out? So this unholy sexual union, of course, sex is involved and feelings, always feelings. And this is the ramification. These are the ramifications. You see? I'll read this again. Lilith is typical of demons who were created by sexual intercourse between the daughters of men and the watchers, the sons of God and the daughters of men. Remember, I told you over and over that the male and the female, it's all there. The Israel star, you've got the lingam, which is going up, was the man, and the yoni is the triangle going down. The union between the sons of God and the daughters of men right there, 666, an abomination, giants. You get it? The Nephilim. That is in almost every sign in the world, practically. I mean, not every, but you know what I'm saying. I've pointed it out so many times. So, they first appeared during the 6 days of creation as disembodied spirits and later took physical form. The book of Zohar says, every pollution of semen gives birth to demons. Now that's interesting. Every pollution of semen gives birth to demons. The Encyclopedia Judaica refers to, quote, the impurity of the serpent who had sexual relations with Eve, unquote. The Kabbalah claims that Lilith had intercourse with Adam and produced demons as part of the cosmic design in which the right and the left are opposing current of currents of pure and impure powers, filling the world and dividing it between the Holy One and the serpent Samael. Zohar Bereshit. That's what it says, Bereshit. 70, I'm not swearing. 73B, or am I? 53 at sequence. Okay. Webster's Dictionary says of Lilith, Hebrew, meaning of the night. Number one, Jewish folklore, a female demon vampire. Two, Jewish folklore, first wife of Adam before the creation of Eve. Many legends identify Lilith as the first wife of Adam. These myths claim that God formed Lilith out of the mud and filth. She soon quarreled with Adam because of her overwhelming pride. She refused to let him lie on top of her. It is for this reason that she was adopted as the patroness of the lesbians. She left Adam and fled to the shores of the Red Sea. Yes, the Communist Sea, where she was said to indulge in her sexual fantasies with demons, living among the wild beasts and hyenas. Her presence gave rise to many terrifying legends. Now, let me just think about this. I wonder if Lilith is, remember Romulus and Remus? Sucking off the teat of a hyena. It was not a wolf. Perhaps that is Romulus and Remus sucking on the teat of Lilith because she was with the hyenas, having sex with hyenas. Maybe that's how hyenas came about. Who knows? Her presence gave rise to many terrifying legends. She became the chief of Jewish demonesses and was said to prey on newly born children, sucking the life out of them. Geez, that doesn't happen today, does it? Unbelievable. She also was known to suck the blood from men who were sleeping alone and is referred to as the night hag. Isaiah 34:14, and wild beasts shall meet with the hyenas, the satyr shall cry to his fellow, yea, there shall the night hag alight and find for herself a resting place. Except for this one verse, her name was excised from all scripture because of her unsavory reputation. My, my, my. Other legends claim that Lilith and her accompanying demonesses ruled over the four seasons as Lilith, Nema, Mentrel, Agrath, and Nehaloth. They were said to gather on a mountaintop near the Mountains of Darkness and there celebrate the witch's Sabbath when they would have intercourse with Samael, the prince of demons. It was because God had such an unfortunate result with Lilith after creating her out of mud and filth that he decided to go to Adam's rib for his next creation, Eve. Now, see, I'm not saying any of this is fact, but put it on your back burner and say, let me contemplate these things. I really do not believe that Adam had sex with Lilith before Eve. I think Adam didn't know what sex was. But then again, I don't know. But to present this to you is not to present confusion. It's just presenting an objective look at what is possible. It doesn't mean it's probable. So, she was subsequently known as Hawa, mother of all living, and also as the serpent mother because of her later association with Satan, the prince, speaking of Eve. The prince of darkness had a number of disguises, but when he incarnated sexual desire as he did for Eve, he always appeared as a serpent. Because evil was now established on earth through the presence of the demons and their followers, it was necessary for God to punish mankind. Yes, because now see, that makes sense, right? Because he's not going to punish you, mankind. In inflicting punishment, He resolved to be just. For this, it was necessary for him to select those who were without stain and who would be allowed to survive the punishment. His method of selection was a simple one. He chose those who had not been contaminated. His choice was Noah with his family. Noah is described in Genesis 6:9. Noah was perfect in his generations, quote unquote. The word generations here is an imperfect translation of the Hebrew word toledah, which means ancestry. In early, notice how they didn't just make it ancestry or toledah, right? Because they want you to think that he was just perfect in his generations. They didn't want you to know that that meant in his race. So, an earlier and more appropriate translation is Noah was a just man and perfect without blemish in his generations. He was God's choice because he and his family were the last remaining pure-blooded Adamites in the world. The Revised Standard Version has an even greater error in its wording. Noah was blameless in his generations, since it does not state that he would have been blamed for. Now, interesting thought right here. Our race has been on the board, right, backed up to the board, since the beginning, hasn't it? The destruction of our race came immediately when Adam and Eve were there. And here, if it is true that Noah and his sons were the only ones left from the white race that were pure-blooded, is it any wonder that we see this about to take place yet again in our world? How many of the pure-blooded white people will be left? How many will it go down to? Will it go down to one family again? I don't think so, because all of Israel will be saved. No, that doesn't mean that all white people will be saved. That means that there'll be people of all tribes saved, all of Israel. Interesting, isn't this? I'm telling you, we're just touching the tip of the iceberg with this book. This is pure gold. Now, you don't have to agree with everything for it to be, an incredible piece, right? You just have to read between the lines from any truth teller, including myself, I would say. I mean, I believe I'm right in what I'm saying, and I believe I'm right a lot of the time, but I couldn't be perfect. I don't think anybody's perfect except the Father in heaven and, when he was in the body of Yeshua in the flesh. But you have to learn how to read between the lines, ladies and gentlemen. The sight of the flood, which was God's prescribed punishment for mankind, was not in the Near Eastern area, as is commonly supposed. Archaeologists have been puzzled for years that they could find no evidence of such a flood in this area. In fact, because Cain had been banished east of Eden, Noah and his family lived in the Tarim Basin, located in the upper Sinkang province. This basin was fed by the river Tarim, and here the deluge took place. Okay, so he's confirming that this was not a worldwide flood. It may have rained worldwide, but it was not a flood worldwide because people in China didn't die. The beasts of the field that were here before Adam did not die. The Father knows how to selectively destroy whom he wishes to destroy. He was trying to destroy the Nephilim out of the area in which we lived in. Having been warned by God of the impending catastrophe, Noah succeeded in building the ark, one of the greatest engineering feats of all time, weighing 36,750 tons. It was built entirely of wood. It was 450 feet long, 70 feet wide, and 45 feet in depth. On this ark, God commanded Noah to take of every living thing of all flesh. Because of the limited space on the ark, there could be no possibility of further reproduction of the species during their time aboard. And God commanded, listen to this, because I never heard this before, God commanded that no intercourse should take place. This commandment was violated by an inhabitant of the ark named Ham, second son of Noah. Ham had intercourse with a pre-Adamic woman on the ark, a dark-skinned person. Their offspring was a black son named Cush, who became the symbol of Ethiopia. So you see, this is how the world is trying to tell you that everything stemmed from Noah, the races. Like as if, you see, this flood was just admittedly only in one area of the world. You understand? So it wasn't going to destroy people in Africa, and it wasn't going to destroy people in China, and it wasn't going to destroy, you know, Eskimos and so on and so forth. You understand? So this is a little ridiculous, and I don't agree with it, but interesting. I don't know where he came up with this. Because there are two Cushes, according to Bertrand Cambrai, which I suppose I'll have to read. Did Moses marry a Negro? No, he didn't. But Cush is usually black. It's known as the black race, Cushites. But Moses did not marry a black woman. It just doesn't make any sense, do you understand? Because the father wouldn't have allowed such a thing. It just wouldn't be. So, Noah was dismayed when he learned of this, that his son had violated God's commandment, because he knew that retribution would come. After the flood had subsided and life on earth went back to its usual routine, Noah continued to be haunted by his fears. The subsequent occurrences have since had dire consequences for all mankind. In the Bible, it appears as somewhat of a riddle, since the characters are identified and misidentified in sequential verses. Neither the exact sequence of events, their explanation, or the identification of the principles can be followed as it appears in Genesis, possibly due to mistranslations or editing over the centuries. Yes. Oh, I definitely think so. Although life on earth had resumed in pre-deluge felicity, Noah continued to be distressed by Ham's transgression. So vexed was he that he drank too much wine, and he lay exposed in his drunkenness. And it is recounted in Genesis 9:24-27, Ham's son, Canaan, saw his... Well, that would make... If Ham's son... Okay, I guess maybe Ham had a son with... Wait a minute, let me get this straight here. I just want to go back for a second, right? Okay, Cush. Right. Ham had intercourse with a pre-Adamic woman and had Cush, but he must have had sex with another woman to have Ham, his son Canaan. So Ham's son Canaan saw his grandfather exposed. Although at one point he is referred to as Noah's youngest son, instead of the correct designation as his grandson, Noah's other sons, Shem and Japheth, seeing their father exposed, hastened to cover him with a cloak. However, when he awakened, Noah was greatly infuriated by what had taken place, and he pronounced a curse on Canaan. Cursed be Canaan, a slave of slaves shall he be to his brothers, Shem and Japheth. Here again is something of a riddle, as Shem and Japheth were the uncles of Canaan, not his brothers. The riddle is probably an intentional one, because it's intended to evoke a special study of these verses to come to an understanding of these very important messages, warnings to all future generations. Now, there are people that think that Canaan had homosexual sex with Noah while he was drunk. But I'm not sure if that's true. I would think it was more that when it says that Noah was uncovered, Noah is one with his wife, and his wife was the one who had the sexual act done to her. And that's what it mean by he was uncovered. See, Noah must have been, you know, so drunk on wine that Canaan came in and had sex with his wife. Now, we've heard about Reuben trying to do things like this, so I mean, this shouldn't surprise you. Shem and Japheth were the uncles of Canaan, not his brothers, right? So, Various explanations have been offered for Noah's tremendous anger at Canaan and his curse of Canaan. One, which has now largely been discounted, is that Ham may have slept with Noah's wife. There you go. Or that he made an attempt to do so. No basis for this conjecture has ever been established. Another explanation is that Noah cursed Canaan because he was still vexed at Ham's violation of God's commandment to the inhabitants of the ark, that they should refrain from intercourse while on board. Because Ham had slept with the pre-Adamic woman on the ark, Noah finally vented his wrath in the curse of Canaan. This also fails to ring true. The men of the Old Testament were very direct in their dealings. If Noah was vexed with Ham, he would have cursed Ham, not Canaan. None of these explanations offer a valid reason for the vehemence of Noah's curse, a curse which has blighted mankind. Well, you could say humanity, right? The Jews have blighted humanity, no doubt about it, for 3,000 years. The only rational explanation for the curse is Noah's anger that Canaan had done something which thoroughly outraged his grandfather. Looking on him while he was exposed would hardly have caused such a reaction, that's for sure. Scholars finally concluded that Canaan had done something so degrading that Noah had to pronounce a curse upon him. What could this have been? Yeah, well, guess what? The Bible, as presently translated, does not really give us a clue. The scholars decided that Canaan, being of mixed race, and therefore not bound by the rigid moral code of the Adamites, had probably committed a homosexual act on his grandfather. They wish. Being of pure stock, Noah would have been exceedingly wroth at such an act and would have reacted as he did. Notice that the devil is always somewhere in the mix. That if this is true, that he had sex with a pre-Adamic woman, already these pure people on a boat already started hybrids then, if this is true. The propensity of us to destroy ourselves is just amazing. Or the animal desire causes problems for us, and the devil takes advantage of such things. The curse of Canaan was extended to the land which was named after him, the land of Canaan. The Canaanites themselves, the people of this land, became the greatest curse upon humanity. And so they remain today. Not only did they originate the practices of demon worship, occult rites, child sacrifice, and cannibalism, but as they went abroad, they brought these obscene practices into every land which they entered. Now, isn't it funny when I talked about the blacks, right? You see that Canaan is a mixed breed, and it was with a dark-skinned, you see, the secret relationship between Jews and blacks. Now, Canaan was no longer white, of course, right? So he was another one of these unholy unions that was cursed now, an abomination, and was not plucked, it was not planted by the Heavenly Father. Isn't this amazing? So, not only did they originate, the Canaanites, originate from practices of demon worship, occult rites, child sacrifice, and cannibalism, but as they went abroad, they brought these obscene practices into every land which they entered. You can see that's true, right? Not only did they bring their demonic cult to Egypt, but known by their later name, the Phoenicians, as they were called after 1200 BC, they became the demonizers of civilization through successive epochs, ages, being known in medieval history as the Venetians, who destroyed the great Byzantine Christian civilization, and later as the Black Nobility. Yeah, this makes sense. Which infiltrated the nations of Europe and gradually assumed power through trickery, revolution, which is rebellion, and financial legerdemain. Legerdemain is sleight of hand. You see? Trickery. The reputation of Canaan is to be found in many ancient records, although its foul history has been carefully expunged from even more of the historic archives and libraries. In 1225 BC, the pharaoh Merneptah, how do you say that? Merneptah, who was, because of his victories in the Canaanite region, was known as the Binder of Gezer, set up a stele to commemorate his successes. Among the inscriptions placed thereon was this, listen, plundered is the Canaan with every evil. All lands are united and pacified. This inscription did not mean that Merneptah had used every evil to plunder the Canaan. It meant that he had, in his sojourn there, encountered every evil practiced by this notorious tribe. Ham had four sons, Cush, who founded the land of Ethiopia, Mizraim, who founded the land of Egypt, Put, who founded Libya, and Canaan, who founded the land of Canaanites, the area now in contention as the state of Israel. In the Agada, Cush is said to be black-skinned as punishment for Ham's having been had intercourse on the ark. You see, we know that the Negroes, I would say that the most applicable would be that when the sons of God came down here and taught mankind how to hybridize everything, I believe they had sex with gorillas or, you know, chimpanzees, etc., or some of those things. And the offspring of that were the blacks. I think that's the most logical. However, you remember that Dr. Wesley Swift said the curly-haired ones from the Dog Star joined Lucifer and his angels against Michael the Archangel, and they were all cast down to the earth. So, who knows which one of these is true, but I'd say the one I say is true, okay? Rather than this. So, three copulated to the ark, and they were all punished. So there were three that copulated on the ark, I guess. The dog, the raven, and Ham. The dog was doomed to be tied. The raven rates his seed to the mouth of his mate, and Ham was smitten in his skin. Note 9 Sanhedrin 108b, from him descended Cush, the Negro, who is black-skinned. Remember, there are two Cushes now. In Talmudic literature, Cushy always means a black person or a Negro race. Cushite is synonymous with black. Yarmoed Katan 16b, that's the Talmud. The Bible, as presently translated, makes no reference to Cush's color. Reference to his descendants. The Cushites appear only in Numbers and in Samuel Book 2. Numbers 12:1 reveals that Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. Here again, no explanation is given to why Miriam and Aaron turned against Moses, yet the matter is obviously of some importance. Because the same verse emphasized by repetition that he had married a Cushite woman, we find the explanation turning to the Talmud, which tells us that Cushite always means black. Well, I believe everything the Jews say. Sure. The verse in Numbers should read, and originally may have read, Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the black or Cushite woman he had married. 2 Samuel contains seven references to Cushites, but again, no descriptions are given. You see, this is how the Jews taint everything up. They're trying to trick people. History has been glossed over by the Jews so that we don't really know what the real truth is on some things. But I will read that document in the near future, Did Moses Marry a Negro? And I think we'll have the complete explanation, and you won't have to ever question that. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense that Moses would marry a black woman. The father would have nailed him. So, I'll read this last paragraph, and we'll continue next week right here. Professor Sayyi, the noted Egyptian scholar and authority in the ancient Near and Middle East, explains that Canaan means low, and Elam means high. The Canaanites were those who inhabited the low places, and the Elamites occupied the high ground. Colonel Garnier, in his great work, The Worship of the Dead, quotes Strabo's observation that the Cushites inhabit the coastal regions of all Asia and Africa. They were never aggressive enough to fight or remain on higher ground. They were forced to remain in the low swampy areas exposed to the elements, areas which other peoples would not contest them for. And that is true. I don't know about Asia, but the blacks lived in the middle of the continent. They did not live in South Africa. And until they were brought into Egypt to serve in the army, they did not live up there either. If they saw a black person, they'd kill him on sight. You know, at the end of the Rabbit Hole radio show, I often give a great piece of advice. At least I believe it is. Don't go down the wrong hole.
They bring disgrace. A man without a face. The sands of time, they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yet just do the best you can. Lines that they told erased. A man without a face. A man without a face. A man without a face.